Good afternoon, and thank you for joining our first quarter 2015 earnings conference call. As usual, Kevin March, TI's Chief Financial Officer, is with me today. For any of you who missed the release, you can find it and relevant non-GAAP reconciliations on our website at ti.com/IR. This call is being broadcast live over the web and can be accessed through TI's website. A replay will be available through the web. This call will include forward-looking statements that involve risks and uncertainties that could cause TI's results to differ materially from management's current expectations. We encourage you to review the notice regarding forward-looking statements contained in the earnings release published today, as well as TI's most recent SEC filings for a more complete description. Revenue growth of 6% from a year ago was within the range of expectations we provided in January. Automotive and industrial markets were strong, as we expected they would be. However, revenue was in the bottom half of the range for two reasons. First was weak demand in the last month of the quarter in our personal electronics market, particularly PCs, and in our communications equipment market, particularly wireless infrastructure equipment. We believe these market-specific issues were due to delay of investments by carriers and capacity upgrades for wireless infrastructure equipment, and a weaker-than-expected refresh cycle for Windows XP. The second reason was a steep decline in the currency exchange rate for the euro relative to the U.S. dollar. The euro dropped about 10% during the quarter, and even though only about 5% of TI's revenue is transacted in euros, it was a sharp enough drop that it negatively impacted our revenue by about $20 million more than we had anticipated. Even with these pockets of weaknesses, our core business of analog and embedded processing turned in their 7th and 10th consecutive quarter of year-over-year growth, respectively. Combined, these businesses grew 9% and were 86% of our total revenue. Earnings per share were 61 cents, reflecting our continued attention to cost controls. Although the vast majority of our revenue is transacted in U.S. dollars, ROE negatively impacted revenue by $20 million, which translated to only about $5 million of impact to earnings and therefore cash flow. This is due to a partial natural hedge against negative currency fluctuations due to our non-U.S.-based operations. It's nice to have a position to be in this when you have almost 90% of our revenue comes outside of the U.S. With that as a backdrop, Kevin and I will move on with our report on business performance that we believe continues to represent the ongoing strength of TI's business model. In the first quarter, our cash flow from operations was $609 million. We believe that free cash flow growth, especially on a per-share basis, is most important to maximizing shareholder value in the long term. Free cash flow for the trailing 12-month period was $3.6 billion, up 17% from a year ago. Free cash flow was 27% of revenue, consistent with our targeted range of 20 to 30% of revenue. This is a 2 percentage point improvement from a year ago period, and we believe reflects our improved product portfolio and the efficiencies of our manufacturing strategy, which includes our growing 300 millimeter output and the opportunistic purchases of assets ahead of demand. We also believe that free cash flow will be valued only if it's returned to shareholders or productively invested in the businesses. For the trailing 12-month period, we returned $4.1 billion of cash to investors through a combination of stock repurchases and dividends. In the first quarter, TI revenue grew 6% from a year ago, with growth in both analog and embedded processing. Analog revenue grew 11% from a year ago, primarily due to power management and high-volume analog and logic. Silicon Valley analog and high-performance analog also grew. As we mentioned earlier, this is the 7th quarter of year-over-year growth for analog. Embedded processing revenue grew 2% from a year ago due to microcontrollers and connectivity. Processor revenue declined, which was impacted by the weakness in wireless infrastructure. And again, as I mentioned earlier, this is the 10th consecutive quarter of year-over-year growth for embedded processing. In our other segment, revenue declined 10% from a year ago, primarily due to custom ASIC products, which also are heavy in wireless infrastructure, as well as DLP products. In distribution, resales increased 11% from a year ago. Weeks of inventory remained at historically low levels of just under 4.5 weeks, which is a decrease by more than a week from a year ago and is even with the fourth quarter. This level has decreased over the past few years because we have structurally changed how our inventory is managed in the distribution channel with our consignment program. From an end market perspective versus a year ago, automotive grew, with most sectors inside this market growing at double-digit rates. Industrial had broad-based growth. Personal electronics grew, although growth in PCs was lower than we expected. Communications equipment declined due to wireless infrastructure, and enterprise systems grew. Kevin will now review profitability, capital management, and our outlook.
Thanks, Dave, and good afternoon, everyone. Gross profit in the quarter was $1.82 billion, or 57.7% of revenue. Gross profit increased 13% from the year-ago quarter, and gross margin was up almost 4 points. Gross profit reflects higher revenue, increased factory loadings, and benefits from our efficient manufacturing strategy as we build more analog chips on 300-millimeter wafers. Moving to operating expenses, combined R&D and SG&A expenses of $777 million were down $68 million from a year ago. The decline primarily reflects the targeted reductions in embedded processing and Japan that were previously announced. As we said, that restructuring was essentially complete at the end of last year. Acquisition charges were $83 million, almost all of which were the ongoing amortization of intangibles, which is a non-cash expense. Operating profit was $958 million, or 30.4% of revenue. Operating profit was up 39% from the year-ago quarter. Operating margin for analog was 35.4%. Operating margin for embedded processing was 18.3%, more than doubling from a year ago, as we executed our restructuring plan to better align resources with the opportunities that we were pursuing as we benefit from our investments for growth. Net income in the first quarter was $656 million, or 61 cents per share. Let me now comment on our capital management results, starting with our cash generation. Cash flow from operations was $609 million in the quarter. Inventory days were 124, about 3 days more than planned due to revenue coming in at the bottom half of our expectations. Capital expenditures were $123 million in the quarter. On a trailing 12-month basis, cash flow from operations was $4.04 billion, up 16% from the same period a year ago. Trailing 12-month capital expenditures were $431 million, or 3% of revenue. As a reminder, our long-term expectation is for capital expenditures to be about 4% of revenue, which includes our $8 billion 300-millimeter analog plan discussed in our recent capital management call. Free cash flow for the past 12 months was $3.61 billion, or 27% of revenue. Free cash flow was 17% higher than a year ago. As we said, we believe free cash flow growth, especially on a per-share basis, is most important to maximizing shareholder value in the long term and will be valued only if it is returned to shareholders or productively invested in the business. As we've noted, our intent is to return 100% of our free cash flow, plus any proceeds we receive from the exercise of equity compensation, minus net debt retirement. In the first quarter, TI paid $356 million in dividends and repurchased $670 million of our stock for a total return of $1.03 billion. Total cash return in the past 12 months was $4.14 billion. Outstanding share count was reduced by 3.2% over the past 12 months and by 39% since the beginning of 2005. These returns demonstrate our confidence in TI's business model and our commitment to return excess cash to our shareholders. Fundamental to our commitment to return cash are our cash management and tax practices. We ended the first quarter with $3.30 billion of cash and short-term investments. TI's U.S. entities owned 82% of our cash. Because our cash is largely onshore, it is readily available for a variety of uses, including paying dividends and repurchasing our stock. TI orders in the quarter were $3.21 billion, up 5% from a year ago. Turning to our outlook, we expect TI revenue in the range of $3.12 billion to $3.38 billion in the second quarter. This represents continuing weakness in our communications equipment and personal electronics markets, particularly for wireless infrastructure equipment and PCs, respectively. We also do not expect a near-term rebound in foreign currency exchange rates. We expect second quarter earnings per share to be in the range of 60 cents to 70 cents. Acquisition charges, which are our non-cash amortization charges, will remain about even and hold at about $80 to $85 million per quarter for the next 5 years. Our expectation for our annual effective tax rate in 2015 remains about 30%, and this is the tax rate you should use for the second quarter and for the year. In summary, we believe that the first quarter demonstrates the strength of TI's business model. While we are not immune to demand and currency changes, their effects are softened by the diversity of our portfolio and our markets. With that, let me turn it back to Dave.
Thanks, Kevin. Operator, you can now open the lines up for questions. In order to provide as many of you as possible an opportunity to ask your questions, please limit yourself to a single question. After our response, we'll provide you an opportunity for additional questions. Operator?
Thank you. And if you would like to ask a question, please signal by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, that is star 1. And we go first to Jim Covello with Goldman Sachs.
Guys, thanks so much for giving me the chance to ask a question. There's so much controversy in the industry today about whether the industry is as cyclical as it used to be, less so, et cetera. You know, I look at your year-over-year growth rates. The June quarter represents the first time you've had a year-over-year decline, you know, at the midpoint of your guidance in a long time. How do you think about that in the context of an industry where many are arguing that we're not cyclical anymore?
Yeah, Jim, we've been pretty guarded at trying to predict the cycle. It's, not something, obviously, that we can control. We really just go to, what we can look at and what we can measure. So, you know, as you kind of tick through the things that you typically look at from a cyclical standpoint, we look at channel inventories are down a week from a year ago. They're lean at just under 4.5 weeks. Lead times are remaining consistent. Our cancellations and reschedules are very low. In addition, we're continuing to deliver on time and very consistently with that. So, you know, we've got a couple of pockets of weaker than expected demand, as we talked about specifically in wireless infrastructure and PCs. You know, at the same time, we're seeing automotive and industrial continuing to be strong as we expect. That's what we know. That's what we can see. The debates will continue on how cyclical our industry will be or won't be.
I might just add that, we do have several significant competitive advantages, the combination of which we believe is pretty difficult for anybody else to replicate, and it helps us deal with any notion of cyclicality or non-cyclicality. And those advantages include that we've got the broadest portfolio in the industry, which really means engineers start their design work by looking at us first. We enjoy very low-cost manufacturing for all the reasons that you've heard us talk about for the last few years, including our 300-millimeter wafer fabs. We have the broadest sales channel, in fact, probably 3 to 4 times larger than our nearest competitor. And we play in an extremely diverse set of markets with long-lived products that can enjoy significant cash returns to our shareholders for a long time. So we think that's what's really important to deal with whatever may be happening in market cycles and just really make sure that we're a lot more competitively advantaged than everybody else.
Yeah, follow-up, Jim?
Yeah, thanks for that. It was helpful. Obviously, you're talking about some weakness in PCs and comms. In the industrial segment, you know, we're starting to see some negative news flow from the customers. Do you see pockets of weakness, but there's just other pockets of strength that are offsetting those industrial customers that may be weak, because I know it's a very broad-based customer base, or do you just not see any weakness at all in that segment at this point? Thanks very much.
Yeah, Jim, I'll just say that, like you were hinting to, it's very broad-based. So we, service over 100,000 customers. Most of those will reside in industrial. And, again, I think it's probably helpful for me to just go through. And when we say industrial, it means something different than I think the investment definition of industrial. So it'll include things like factory automation and control and medical, healthcare, fitness products, building automation, smart grid, energy test equipment, motor drives, display, space avionics, appliances, and other segments. So, again, very, very broad. Of course, we'll always see pockets of strength and weaknesses, but overall that industrial is doing well. We've seen growth in almost all those sectors that I've described. Okay, thank you. We'll go to the next caller, please.
And we'll go now to Chris Danely with Citi.
Hey, thanks, guys. Dave, you did a good job of outlining the relative areas of weakness in Q1 from currency and comm and PC. Can you just give us which you think would be a bigger drag in terms of company sales from PC versus communications? And then do you guys expect a negative impact from currency in Q2 as well? And if you could give us the magnitude of that negative impact.
Yeah, so the one that's pretty straightforward to identify, because it's really just math walking through the numbers, is that on a year-on-year basis, we'll probably see about a $50 million headwind due to currency exchange rates. And, obviously we're not assuming that we see a rebound in those rates. We'll still see and expect to see the weakness in PCs and wireless infrastructure. And it's kind of in the balance of the business. As you know, there's always puts and takes. As an example, second quarter a year ago, DLP was very strong, if you remember. It was benefiting from several world events, one of them like the World Cup. That won't repeat, so that'll be weaker than it was a year ago and will continue for the rest of the year. But inside of that bucket, we'll continue to have puts and takes. Do you have the other comment that I'd just make on that, although we see those pockets of weakness, if you look at the core businesses of analog and embedded, we do believe that those will continue to perform well. So you have a follow-up, Chris?
Yeah, actually, just a couple of clarifications. So would you expect the PC or the wireless infrastructure to have a bigger drag on your revenue in Q2? And then, it almost seems like, do we need the dollar to weaken again for that impact to go away, i.e. if the dollar remains strong, is that going to be like a negative impact for you guys every quarter?
Chris, I would say that we probably don't have enough detail to tell you whether wireless infrastructure or PC, which is going to be more of a drag. We just don't expect them to be recovering in the second quarter. As it relates to ROE, certainly with, if you take a look at just the euro alone, versus a year ago, it's down 23%. The yen is down 14%. We roughly average about 5% of our revenue in euros and around 3% in yen. So clearly, with that kind of weakness on a year-over-year compare, that's gonna continue to be an issue that's gonna just affect that kind of math. Doesn't affect our ability to sell in those markets. We continue to remain very competitive in those spaces as we enjoy a lot of design wins. But unless the ROE moves back and the dollar weakens, then certainly with that kind of dramatic decline in those two major currencies, that will be, at least on the fringes, a year-over-year compare headwind for us.
Yeah. And I'll just add to that like we saw in the first quarter where we had an impact of about $20 million, because of the natural hedging, we've got the impact to operating profit and free cash flow is really only about $5 million, so fairly small on that front. Okay, thanks, Chris, and we'll move on to the next caller, please.
We now go to John Pitzer with Credit Suisse.
Yeah, good afternoon, guys. Thanks for letting me ask the question. I guess I don't want to beat a dead horse, but just on the outlook, I mean, when I look at the Q1, it looks like you guys are only missing the midpoint of your guide by about $50 million, and you explained $20 million of that on currency. As I go to Q2, if I just kind of anchor against seasonality, you're kind of missing it by $150 to $200 million. And I guess sequentially, are you expecting any more kind of headwinds from currency? I understand the year-over-year compare. I'm kind of trying to figure out the sequential compare. And when I look at PCs plus comm infrastructure, help me understand the percent of the business that represents. I'm thinking around 15. Maybe I'm wrong with that. And I guess I'm trying to get a sense as to why you think the miss in Q2 is going to be so much larger in those two buckets than the miss in Q1.
Yeah, John, I'll take the first part of the question and Kevin can add in if he'd like to. The first, if you look at our PC revenues, as a percentage of our total is around 5%. If you were to include hard drives into that, that'll add a few points. So you'll be, just under 10% in upper single digits. If you look at wireless infrastructure, Last year, it was about 10% of our revenue. So obviously combined there, you're in the mid-teens. So that'll give you an idea of what that impact is. Again, you know, as Kevin kind of walked through the math of like the euro as an example, last year 18% of our revenue was done in Europe, about a third of that, so 5-6% is transacted in euro. And again, sequentially, I don't know if you have any additional comments on the impact of the euro.
Yeah, I think just 1Q to 2Q, I think is what you're trying to ask for there, John. The average ROE that we experienced on our billings in 1Q was about, for the euro, was about 1.13. And for planning purposes, we're using 1.06 going into 2Q. So there's going to be a little bit of a just a quarter-over-quarter ROE impact just from that standpoint as it relates to the euro. Right now, we're anticipating the yen to be pretty flat.
You have a follow-on, John?
Yeah, I do, guys. And then I know that within the comms section specifically, you guys were doing a little bit of pruning with the product portfolio. And I'm wondering if any of the pruning that you've done is being reflected in kind of either sequential or year-over-year growth rates, or do you feel like that's not a factor as you look at the June guide?
Yeah, we don't believe that is a factor, John. You know, I think if you look at the impact that wireless infrastructure has, you know, we sell more analog product than we do embedded or the custom ASIC products. So it actually hit both analog, embedded, and other. Of course, you can see the impact more significantly in embedded because it's a higher percentage of that revenue. Again, we've got a good position really across most of the major OEMs there, and so what we're seeing is really a change in shipments and in demand. So thanks, John, and we'll go to the next caller, please.
We go now to Stacy Rasgon with Bernstein.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my questions. First, I was wondering if you could give us a handle on where you see OPEX going next quarter, given the revenue shortfall.
Yeah, Stacy, you know, OPEX was up about as expected fourth quarter, the first quarter, and recall that in the fourth quarter, we typically are down a bit on OPEX because of seasonality for holidays and so on. In the absence of those seasonality, those holidays in the first quarter, along with our annual pay and benefit increases, traditionally drives our OPEX up quarter over quarter. Those pay and benefit increases kick in February, so there's really only 2 months' worth inside the OPEX right now in first quarter, so we'll have the full 3 months. So you'll see just a very slight increase going in the second quarter.
Got it. Thank you. That's helpful. For my follow-up, again on currency, I know you guys are pointing to sort of direct translation effects. We've had other players who have pointed to demand destruction from currency, and I was wondering if you could give us your point of view on what you're seeing more broadly in the market, not just for your revenues, but also for your customers, and are you seeing any sort of broad-based TAM destruction because of the currency movements that we've had?
Yeah, Stacey, you know, we've talked about that, but there's no way for us to really point to something and demonstrate evidence that that's actually occurring. Given that the entire industry tends to price in dollars for the preponderance of what's being shipped, there's not a lot of other alternatives, it would seem, for customers from a demand standpoint. But that's not to say there might not be a second-order knock-on effect like what you're alluding to, and we just don't see any way that we can quantify that with any confidence.
Yeah. And there's always pluses and minuses with currency moves, so it's really impossible for us to be able to quantify that. Okay, thank you, Stacy. We'll go to the next caller, please.
We go now to Harlan Sur with J.P. Morgan.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my question. Given the timing of when you started to see the weakness that you talked about in the March quarter, and just given the softer than seasonal Q2 outlook, would you have to ratchet down your wafer fab manufacturing activity or wafer starts here in Q2?
Harlan, yes, we will be lightening up the wafer starts in 2Q. I would caution you, though, that pulling back on the wafer starts doesn't necessarily mean that that will have a direct impact on our inventory, as the work in process in 1Q will become finished goods in 2Q. So we would expect our inventory probably still goes up a bit in 2Q, even though we'll pull back on the wafer starts a little bit.
Okay, great. Thanks for that. And then Analog was up nicely, 11% year-over-year, despite the headwinds. Embedded was up only 2%, which is a pretty significant deceleration year-over-year versus the prior quarter. I'm assuming that the embedded weakness was primarily driven by DSPs, given the muted wireless infrastructure spending environment?
It's correct. It was impacted by the wireless infrastructure. And in fact, if you look at the businesses inside of embedded, we had good growth in microcontrollers and connectivity both, but processors were down for the exact reason that you were identifying. So, okay, thank you, Carlin. We'll go to the next caller, please.
We now go to Ross Seymour with Deutsche Bank.
Guys, thanks for letting me ask a question. One other avenue to get at the broad-based demand trends, are you seeing any sort of difference in demand patterns from your distributor customers relative to the OEM customers? Are they getting any more nervous or excited and willing to carry inventory? And I realize the weeks of inventory data that you gave before, but from a bookings perspective, any color would be helpful.
I think all I'd just offer on that, Ross, is that on a year-over-year basis, you know, bookings were up 5%. 60% of our revenue does go through disti, so clearly we're seeing a lot of the bookings coming through the disti channel. The inventory levels they're carrying are about 4.5 weeks, which is down about a week from a year ago, so they continue to carry lean levels of inventory. And I think largely that's because they know that we carry inventory in consignment. We also maintain very short lead times, as we have for a number of years now, and so their ability to get inventory quickly is pretty reliable for them when they order with us. So I don't from those kinds of elements inside that space, there's no real, again, signs that we can look at that says, gee, there's demand destruction going on because of ROE. There really can't do anything there.
Right. And I'd add, Ross, that if you look at our resales overall, that was very consistent with our combined analog and embedded sales, so it was in the upper single digits, very close to the same number. Do you have a follow-on, Ross?
Yeah, a quick one, just to make sure that I have all the moving parts. It sounds like in an answer to a prior question, Kevin, you said OPEX will be up a little. You also said it sounds like utilization will be down. It seems like putting that together with your earnings guidance, it implies gross margin is going to be down a bit sequentially. Is that, one, is that math directionally correct? Two, is the cause of the gross margin simply utilization, or is there some mix effect that I also need to appreciate? Thanks.
Yeah, you may be missing the mix effects inside there, Ross. I don't expect much change in the margin.
Okay. Thank you for that question, Ross. We'll go to the next caller, please.
We go now to Joe Moore with Morgan Stanley.
Great, thank you. In the markets that you're seeing weakness in PCs and wireless infrastructure, do you think, is it an inventory or a demand problem? And I guess what is, you know, we've seen other suppliers into the PC sector talk about a return to sort of better than seasonal second half as you get past inventory correction. Where do you stand on that?
Joe, I just say, you know, first of all, that, you know, the wireless infrastructure market has notoriously been very choppy as you look at demand over the number of years. So there's usually a significant build as, you know, OEMs are planning to bid for the operators spend, and then you know, it typically surprises us and you know, there's an overbuild that occurs. So one kind of begets the other. We think that the wireless infrastructure market, obviously long term, is a good market for us, and we've got a good position in. You know, just as the numbers come down, they'll come up again one day. On the PC side, you know, that's only a couple of percent of our revenue, so I don't think we really have any unique insight on that. You know, we believe that weakness is due to the inventory that's created because there wasn't as much demand in the XP refresh cycle, but really nothing beyond that. We'll see how, you know, the rest of this quarter goes before we start making predictions on the back half. We'll just take it one quarter at a time. So you have a follow-on?
Yeah, and I guess specifically, I think John Pitzer had mentioned the restructuring that you did, but just specifically, you did cut back on R&D in macro base stations, and I'm wondering if there's anything directly that would point to that decision versus the revenue you're seeing now, or is it completely separate from that?
Yeah. Again, I think that, you know, when we look at those markets, they're very long-tailed and product cycles. We continue to make investments. They're just not at the same rates that we were making, you know, 5 and 10 years ago. And that's not unlike what we've done in other markets as they've begun to mature. So, you know, there's other areas of wireless infrastructure that looks like it will be very promising growth, like small cells, and we continue to invest at very high levels there, while we have very little revenue today. So, you know, we just believe that, you know, we've got to throttle that investment based on the opportunity overall. So thanks for that question, and we'll go to the next caller.
We go now to Timothy Arcuri with Cowen and Company.
Thanks a lot. I had two questions. First of all, I had a question about the channel. Did you see any meaningful cancels this quarter? And I had a follow-up on the inventory.
No, we saw cancellations continue to run very, very low, as we've seen for a number of quarters now. And same is true of reschedules, too, by the way, also very, very low. So no patterns indicating change in demand there.
Okay, great. And then, Kevin, you said inventory is going to be up, I think, again. You said in June, despite loadings being down. I guess my question is, what do you think is sort of the, you know, now that you've had a couple quarters to think about the mix, what do you think is the right normalized level of inventory? And do you think that we're going to come back down to sort of that more normalized level during the back half of the year?
Yeah, Tim, we are going to use 2015 to really kind of monitor the effect of all the changes we've been doing with the portfolio and with our operations to model what we think is a more appropriate overall level of average inventories to carry. What we did conclude was that the prior model, which had worked for us quite well, of 105 to 115 days, was appropriate given the mix that we had. But clearly, as we moved to more and more consignment, as we moved to keeping lead times very short across the vast abundance of our portfolio, that dictates that we've got to carry more inventory than we have in the past. And so we'll be using 2015 to run various tests on what the appropriate level of inventories are to meet the service metrics that our customers have come to expect of us. And then probably by the time we get to early next year when we do our capital management update, we'll go ahead and articulate a new model at that point in time.
Great. Tim, thank you. And we'll go to the next caller, please.
We now go to Romit Shah with Nomura.
Yeah, thank you, Kevin, Dave. I wanted to clarify how, you know, these two segments that comprise 15% of revenue are driving, you know, what I estimate as a 500 basis point miss relative to seasonality. Are you guys just being conservative in anticipation of maybe a fallout in some of your other end markets, or am I just not, fully incorporating other parts of the equation here?
So I'll go ahead and just, I think Dave attempted last time, I'll give it a try. There are several moving parts going on there when you look at 2Q, and the best comparers on a year-over-year basis. So just the ROE alone impacts us about $50 million from a year-over-year compare from growth rate. Then you go beyond that, and you've got continuing weakness in wireless infrastructure and PCs, and then you've also got the absence of the benefit that DLP had a year ago, which was meaningful due to the World Cup and other large sporting events. In fact, we saw some of that impact of DLP already begin to occur in first quarter. As we mentioned, DLP was down quite a bit in first quarter. So you got those kinds of headwinds, ROE, wireless infrastructure, PC, and DLP. And then we've got the rest of the portfolio basically doing fine, consistent with what we've been seeing in the economy for the last few quarters.
Okay, we'll follow up on that.
Yeah, thanks for the clarification, Kevin. I just wanted to ask you about M&A. There's been, as you guys have seen, a lot of activity over the last year. And when I think about TI, M&A has certainly been part of your DNA over the last 10 to 15 years. Can you just talk about how you're thinking about M&A specifically in this environment, relative to buying back your own stock?
Yeah, Ramit, our M&A posture hasn't changed at all, that meaning that the most important thing is that to the extent that we consider an acquisition, it's got to be something that fits into our strategy, that's consistent with our portfolio interests, and something that we can generate long-term returns on and therefore excess free cash flow for our shareholders. If it kind of passes the strategy test, then it's got to pass the numbers test. And frankly, we have a hard time with many of the companies that are out there today making those kind of numbers work. Contrast that to when we bought National back in 2011, at a time when all semiconductor stock prices were considerably lower. You can certainly see in retrospect that was a very good return for our shareholders. So we tend to be very disciplined on that. We'll continue to be disciplined on that. Buying back our own shares right now, especially as long as they trade below the intrinsic value of the company, is also continues to be a good return for our shareholders, especially from a free cash flow perspective.
Okay, thanks, Ramit. We'll go to the next caller, please.
We now go to Ambrish Srivastava with BMO.
Hi, thank you. Kevin, you mentioned if you look at the portfolio, the rest of the business is doing fine outside of the factors that you highlighted. If you go back to history and look at such a sharp deceleration, destruction, let's use that word, on the exchange rate, when do you expect that to manifest itself in other parts of the business? So, for instance, the distributors in Europe and other pieces, widgets that Sammy's go into, for instance, in industrials and autos. What does past currency issues tell us on that front? And then I had a quick follow-up.
Yeah, Ambrish, I wish I had some clever insight on that, but I'm afraid I don't just from an experience standpoint. I actually do not recall that my experience in this capacity, and I've been in this role for a very long time now, seeing currency drop this sharply in this short a period of time. So I have no history from which to try to get a reference point to answer a question like that. I think we're just all going to have to wait and see where this takes us. I think the encouraging part is, especially in industrial and automotive, is that the silicon content going into those spaces continues to increase year over year. And so despite ROE impacts, I don't think that's going to slow down the silicon content increases in those spaces. And frankly, if you look at the pricing of those end equipments, the cost of a 50-cent analog chip going to 55 cents is pretty irrelevant to an automotive customer, I think. So you look at the more macro effects, and especially where we see growth for semiconductors and auto and industrial, it doesn't seem likely that we would see a sharp impact in demand caused just because of ROE. There may be other factors that may lead to that kind of difference.
Yeah, and I just add that as many arguments as putting pressure on demand, there's as many arguments that it could help demand on the other side. So it's really tough to be able to quantify each of those impacts. So, Ambrish, you've got a follow-up?
Yes, I did, Dave. Thank you. And this is a clarification in response to Ross's question. Kevin, did you say gross margin will be flat? And if so, the way to think about it is that factory loading goes down in the non-300-millimeter and 300-millimeter is continuing to ramp, so that offsets that lower factory loading?
That's a safe way to think about it, Ambrish. There's mix going on inside there, but clearly we continue to ramp up 300-millimeter, which is much more cost-effective for us. And so in balance, we don't expect much change in margins.
Okay, thanks, Ambrish. We can go to the next caller, please.
We go now to Doug Friedman with RBC Capital.
Great. Thanks, guys, for giving me an opportunity to ask a question. Just to follow on that mix shift that you're seeing, Kevin, can you possibly give us the utilization on your overall factory base and the utilization that you're seeing in 300 mil, and then I have a follow-up.
Yeah, Doug, on the utilization, you know, we typically will just talk about that if something drastic has occurred, so I won't go into that right now. I will remind you that on a capital management call, I did discuss for our fab in particular, that we have the majority of the equipment necessary to support the build-out of that factory to a $5 billion revenue level, and that in 2014, we had achieved about $2 billion worth of build for revenue in support of that. So call that roughly 40% utilized. But at the same time, we're also converting DMOS 6 from its exclusive use by embedded processing to also be able to be used by analog, and that will add another $3 billion of 300-millimeter analog capacity in DMOS 6. So you could say, in a sense, that our utilization of 300-millimeter may actually decline, but that's not because of loadings. That's because of increase in our capacity.
And the question really that I have as my follow-up is when you look at the year-on-year growth, last year clearly we had a nice year, but with the guidance you've just offered, we're actually down year-on-year. if we look at the long-term growth rate of your business, is there a point in time at which you might adjust what you think your long-term growth rate would be such that you felt factory consolidation would be part of the equation to drive higher efficiency?
No, Doug, factory consolidation isn't on our radar. What we're really interested in is very inexpensive factory acquisition with extremely low carrying costs that allows us to grow into it in a very efficient manner. As we've been talking about, you know, analog and embedded processing for an extended period of time now have been growing at about a 9% compound annual growth rate. And in fact, even combined for this 1Q that we just closed out, they grew another 9% year over year. So they continue to grow quite healthy. I would expect that as we move forward in time, we'll look at those factories that provide us the best cost efficiency and cash flow delivery and keep those operating and loading those. That's probably going to be biased in our loadage towards 300 milliliter.
Yeah. And I just add, too, that, you know, if you look at the growth rates in time and just look at what's happened in second quarter, you know, the overall numbers are very strong. I mean, if you look at our gross margins, you look at where our OPEX levels are, our operating margins, you know, with that 9% analog and embedded processing growth, you know, this quarter we turned in 27% free cash flow, right? So our financial performance isn't predicated on having to hit a certain growth level. We can do very well in a low growth environment, or you know, if things pick up, we're in a good position to be able to support that as well. So, okay, thank you, Doug. And we go to the next caller, please.
We'll now go to Blayne Curtis with Barclays.
Hey guys, thanks for my question. Maybe just looking back at the weakness in the PC market, you clearly had a fairly seasonal December. I don't know if you saw any PC slowdown there. Intel sure didn't, but then it looks like you took a correction in March. So one, if you could, I apologize if you already answered this, but within analog, was your high performance and Silicon Valley still up in March, and really it was the PC dragging it down? If so, it would be down, you know, probably double digits. Is that the right way to look at it? And then as you look to June, you know, Intel is up, PC channel starting to turn around. Is it just that you're working through some inventory, or you know, if there's any way you can quantify that, and then kind of just help me with the math as to when do you really start to see this?
Yeah, well, let me take a shot at it, and then I'll let you ask a follow-up. Some of that I think we've touched on, but again, the weakness that we saw, Blayne, was you know, really had manifested in March, you know, it was both in PCs and in wireless infrastructure. You know, obviously, I don't know how that you know, played out at some of our competitors. But we do expect to see that weakness in second quarter. Obviously, our guidance is reflective of that. So I don't know if that helped, or if there's part of that you'd like to ask a clarification or a follow-up.
Maybe I was asking that. You know, obviously, I can sign up for a full-year forecast, but when you look at the businesses of PC and comm, you know, clearly they've been down for several quarters here, or will be with the June guide. To get full year growth would, you know, require a substantial pickup in the second half. Do you see these as headwinds this year for you? And if so, how much?
You know, Blayne, I'll just take that. We'll go ahead and forecast the balance of the year in front of each quarter when we get there. So we just give you a guide one quarter at a time. Obviously, I think you guys are probably better equipped than we are to come up with analysis to help figure out what the year might be, and we'll just leave it at that.
Okay, and that we are now out of time, so I'd like to thank you all for joining us today, and a replay of this call is available on our website. Good evening.
This concludes our conference. Thank you for your participation.